Where have you hidden, beloved, and left me moaning? She calls him beloved to move more, to answer her prayer. When God is loved, he very readily answers the requests of his lover. This he teaches through St. John. If you abide in me, ask whatever you desire, and it shall be done unto you. John 15:7. A person can truthfully call God beloved when he is wholly with him, does not allow his heart attachment to anything outside of him, and thereby ordinarily centers his mind on him. This is why Delilah asked Samson how he could say he loved her, since his spirit was not with her. Judges 16:15. And this spirit includes the mind and the affection. Some call the bridegroom beloved, whereas he is not really their beloved, because their heart is not wholly set on him. As a result, their petition is not of much value in his sight. They do not obtain their request until, through perseverance in prayer, they keep their spirit more continually with God, and their heart with its affectionate love more entirely set on him. Nothing is obtained from God except by love. It is noteworthy of her next remark, "And left me moaning," that the absence of the beloved causes continual moaning in the lover. Since she loves nothing outside of him, she finds no rest or relief in anything. This is how we recognize the person who truly loves God, if he is content with nothing less than God. But what am I saying? If he is content, even if he possesses everything, he will not be content. In fact, the more he has, the less satisfied he will be. Satisfaction of heart is not found in the possession of things, but in being stripped of them all, and in poverty of spirit. Since perfection consists in this poverty of spirit, in which God is possessed by a very intimate and special grace, the soul, having obtained it, lives in this life with some satisfaction, although not complete. For David, in spite of all his perfection, hoped to have this fullness in heaven, saying, "When your glory appears, I shall be filled." Psalm 16. As a result, the peace, tranquility, and satisfaction of heart attainable in this life is insufficient to prevent the soul from moaning within itself. Although this moan may be tranquil and painless, hoping for what it lacks. Moaning is connected with hope, and the apostle affirmed that he and others moaned even though they were perfect. We ourselves, who have the first fruits of the Spirit, moan within ourselves, hoping for the adoption of the sons of God. Romans 8:23. The soul, then, bears this moan within herself, in her enamored heart. For there, where love wounds, is the moan rising from the wound, and if it ever cries out in the feeling of his absence, especially when the soul, after the taste of some sweet and delightful communication of the bridegroom, suffers his absence and is left alone and dry, she thus says, "You fled like the stag." It is noteworthy that in the canticle, the bride compares the bridegroom to the stag and the mountain goat. "My beloved is like a gazelle or a young stag." Canticles 2:9. She makes this comparison not only because he is withdrawn and solitary and flees from companions like the stag, but also because of the swiftness with which he shows and then hides himself. He usually visits devout souls in order to gladden and enliven them, and then leaves in order to try, humble, and teach them. Because of his visits, his withdrawals are felt with keener sorrow, as is evident in the following verse. After wounding me, this is like saying, the pain and the sorrow I ordinarily suffer in your absence was not enough for me, but having inflicted upon me a deeper wound of love with your arrow, and increasing my desire to see you, you flee as swiftly as the stag, and do not let yourself be captured even for a moment. In further explanation of this verse, it should be known that besides the many other different kinds of visits God grants to the soul, in which he wounds and raises it up in love, he usually bestows some secret touches of love, which like fiery arrows pierce and wound it, leaving it wholly cauterized by the fire of love. And these wounds mentioned here are properly called wounds of love. They so inflame the will in its affection that it burns up in this flame and fire of love. So intense is this burning that the soul is seemingly consumed in that flame, and the fire makes it go out of itself, wholly renews it, and changes its manner of being, as in the case of the phoenix, which burns itself in the fire and rises anew from the ashes. David said in this regard, "My heart was so inflamed, and my reins have been changed, and I was brought to nothing, and I knew not." Psalm 72. The appetites and the affections which the prophet refers to as reins are all changed to divine ones in that inflammation of the heart, and the soul, through love, is brought to nothing and knows nothing save love. The changing of these reins at this time is accompanied by a kind of immense torment and yearning to see God. So extreme is this torment that love seems to be unbearably rigorous with the soul, not because he has wounded her. She rather considers these wounds to be favorable to her health, but because he left her thus, suffering with love, and did not slay her for the sake of her seeing and being united with him in the life of perfect love. In stressing or declaring her sorrow, she says, "After wounding me," that is, leaving me thus wounded, thus dying with wounds of love for you, you have hidden as swiftly as the stag. This feeling is so strong because in that love wound which God produces in the soul, the affection of the will rises with sudden rapidity toward the possession of the beloved, whose touch was felt just as quickly. She feels his absence and the impossibility of possessing him here as she wants. And together with this feeling, she then experiences moaning over his absence. These visits are not like others, in which God refreshes and satisfies the soul. He bestows these to wound more than heal, and afflict more than satisfy, since they serve to stimulate knowledge and increase the appetite, consequently the sorrow and the longing to see God. These are termed spiritual wounds of love, and are very delightful and desirable. The soul would desire to be ever dying 1,000 deaths from these thrusts of the lance, for they make her go out of herself and enter into God. She explains this in the following verse. I went out calling you, and you were gone. No medicine can be gotten for these wounds of love, except from the one who causes them. Thus the wounded soul, strengthened from the fire caused by the wound, went out after her beloved who wounded her, calling for him that he might heal her. This spiritual departure, it should be pointed out, refers to the two ways of going after God. One consists of a departure from all things, affected through a contempt for them. The other, in going out from oneself through self-forgetfulness, which is achieved by the love of God. When the love of God really touches the soul, as we are saying, it so raises her up that it not only impels her to go out from self in this forgetfulness, but even draws her away from her natural supports, manners, and inclinations, thus inducing her to call after God. Accordingly, this verse is like saying, my spouse, in that touch and wound of your love, you have not only drawn my soul away from all things, but have also made it go out from self. Indeed, it even seems that you draw it out of the body, and you have raised it up to yourself, while it was calling after you, now totally detached so as to be attached to you. And you were gone, is like saying, at the time I desired to hold fast to your presence, I did not find you, and the detachment from one without attachment to the other left me suspended in air and suffering without any support from you or from myself. What the soul refers to as going out in search of the beloved, the bride of the canticle calls rising. I will rise and seek him whom my soul loves, by going about the city, through the squares and the suburbs. But, she adds, I did not find him, and they wounded me. Canticles 3:2. The rising of the soul, the bride, is spiritually understood of rising from the lowly to the sublime. The same is understood at the soul's words here. I went out, that is, from her lowly manner and love to the sublime love of God. Yet the bride states that she was wounded because she did not find him. And the soul also declares that she was wounded with love and that he left her. The loving soul lives in constant suffering at the absence of her beloved, for she is already surrendered to him and hopes for the reward of that surrender. The surrender of the beloved to her, yet he does not do so. Now lost to herself and to all things for the sake of her loved one, she has gained nothing from her loss, since she does not possess him. The suffering and the pain arising from God's absence is usually so intense in those who are nearing the state of perfection. At the time of these divine wounds, that if the Lord did not provide, they would die. Since the palate of their will is healthy and their spirit is cleansed and well prepared for God, and they have been given some of the sweetness of divine love, which they desire beyond all measure, they suffer immeasurably. For an immense good is shown them, as through the fissure of a rock, but not granted them. Thus their pain and their torment is unspeakable. Stanza 2. Shepherds, you that go up through the sheepfolds to the hill, if by chance you see him I love most, tell him that I sicken, suffer, and die. Commentary. The soul in this stanza desires the advantage of intercessors and intermediators with her beloved by begging them to bring him word and her grief and pain. This is the trait of a lover. When she herself cannot converse with her loved one, she does so through the best means possible. The soul wants to take advantage of her desire, affection, and moanings as messengers that know so well how to manifest to the beloved the secret of the lover's heart. She entreats them to go crying, "Shepherds, you that go." She calls her desires, affections, and moanings shepherds because they pasture the soul with spiritual goods. A shepherd or pasture is one who feeds or pastures. And by means of these yearnings, God communicates himself to her and gives her the divine pasture. Without them, his communications are slight. You that go is like saying, you that go out through pure love. Not all the affections and the desires go to him, but only those that go out to him for true love. Up through the sheepfolds to the hill, she calls the hierarchies and the choirs of angels sheepfolds. Through them, from choir to choir, our moanings and our prayers go to God. She refers to God as the hill, because he is the supreme height, and because in him, as on a hill, one has a view of all things, and both the higher and the lower sheepfolds. Our prayers rise up to him through the angels, who offer them to him, as we said. The angel told Tobias, when you were praying with tears and burying the dead, I was offering your prayer to God. Tobit 12:12. These shepherds can also be the angels who not only carry our messages to God, but also God's messages to us. They feed our souls like good shepherds, with sweet communications and inspirations from God. They are the means by which God grants them, and they protect us from the wolves, which are the devils. Whether, then, these shepherds refer to the affections or to the angels, the soul longs that they all be helps and intermediators with her beloved. She pleads with them all, if by chance you see. This means, if by my good luck you so reach his presence that he sees and hears you. It is noteworthy that even though God has knowledge and understanding of all, and even sees the very thoughts of the soul, as Moses asserts, it is said, when he remedies our necessities, that he sees them, and when he answers our prayers, that he hears them. Deuteronomy 31:21. Not all needs and petitions reach the point at which God, in hearing, grants them. They must wait until his eyes, they arrive at the suitable time, the season, and the number. Then it is said that he sees and hears them. This is evident in Exodus. After the 400 years in which the children of Israel had been afflicted by the Egyptian slavery, God declared to Moses, I have seen the affliction of my people and have come down to free them. Exodus 3:7-8. Even though he had always seen it. And Saint Gabriel too told Zechariah not to fear, because God had heard his prayer and given him the son for which he had prayed those many years, even though God had always heard that prayer. Luke 1:13. Every soul should know that even though God does not answer its prayer immediately, he will not, on account, fail to answer it at the opportune time if it does not become discouraged and give up its prayer. He is, as David remarks, a helper in opportune times and tribulations. Psalm 9:10. The soul means in saying, if by chance you see, that if by chance the time is at hand for my petitions to be heard by him that I love most, that is, by him I love more than all things. She loves him more than all things when nothing intimidates her in doing and suffering for love of him, whatever is for his service. And when she can also say truthfully what she proclaims in the following verse, it is a sign that she loves him above all things. The verse is, tell him that I sicken, suffer, and die. In this line, the soul discloses three needs: sickness, suffering, and death. The soul that truly loves God with some perfection usually suffers from his absence in three ways: in the intellect, the will, and the memory. She says she sickens through the intellect because she does not see God, the health of the intellect. God says through David, I am your health. Psalm 34. She declares she suffers through the will because she does not possess him. The will's refreshment and delight. David also says, you shall fill them with the torrent of your delight. Psalm 35. She says she dies through the memory because in remembering, she lacks all the goods of the intellect, the vision of God, and the delights of the will, the possession of God, and that it is highly possible, among the dangers and the sinful occasions of this life, to be without him forever. She suffers a distress that resembles death, for she sees her want of the sure and perfect possession of God, who, as Moses affirms, is the soul's life. He is certainly your life. Deuteronomy 30:20.